Hello again and welcome back. People were startled earlier this month when there was a partial collapse of a 155-year-old building on McLeod's Landing. We have experienced street collapses, deteriorating bridges, several of which are currently under repair, major roads and highways also in need of repair. The need is coupled with the reality that federal and state funds for infrastructure work are in short supply. Just how serious is this infrastructure problem in our region? Here to discuss it, Bill Schnell, Assistant District Engineer, that is, for the Missouri Department of Transportation. Lance Lacombe is the Manager of Public Information for the Metropolitan St. Louis Sewer District. Andrew Weil is Executive Director of Landmarks Association of St. Louis. And David Lott is an architect with Trivers Associates. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you. What I'd like to do is ask each of you to explain how you see the infrastructure situation from your perspective. Bill, I'll start with you.
Sure. You know, in Missouri, we have 10,000 bridges, over 10,000 bridges and 30,000 miles of road. And they're continually needing work. Most of the highway system was built in the 1950s and 60s. Bridges are typically designed to last 50 to 75 years. So we're at the end of life of most of these structures. St. Louis in particular, if you look, we're kind of a peninsula. We're surrounded by rivers. So our entire livelihood depends on being connected to the rest of the region. So we have a lot of major river bridges. You've seen us replace recently from Blanchette Bridge a year ago. Right now we're in process of replacing the Boone Bridge in Chesterfield Valley between St. Charles County. And we just opened a new I-70 bridge downtown. So it's a continual process that you continually have to replace older structures. And occasionally you have to add a new one just for the demands of the area.
So we do have a situation, if we only looked at it in terms of the amount of time that the roads and the bridges have been around, that clearly we have a problem with.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Lance Lacombe, I'll turn to you next from MSD's perspective. I worry about what we don't see, what's under the ground, and that's where you guys come in.
Yeah, there's a vast infrastructure network underneath our feet. I mean, really, there is a city underneath the city. For our part, the sewer district, here in St. Louis, we have the fourth largest sewer system in the United States. Parts of it date back to the mid-19th century. We still have sewers that are partially made of wood in downtown St. Louis, and they are working fine. But there are portions of our system that we need to reinvest in. We have a $4.7 billion program called MSD Project Clear to do that reinvestment over the next 23 years. So we're in a good position. Rates are going to go up, of course, but you know our rates are going to remain very average compared to the rest of the nation. But when dealing with infrastructure and talk about infrastructure, I'd reference an American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, report in 2013. They put out a report card every 4 years. The last one was done in 2013. And between 2013 and 2020, the difference between what was budgeted and what is needed for infrastructure overall in the United States is $3.6 trillion. It's a huge, huge number. You know, we think of infrastructure as just roads and bridges at times, but there's, you know, electrical conduits, sewers, water, ports, all types of systems that allow us to live and have economic growth in our community.
We have an occasional street collapse in the city of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Is that a result of that? The city below the city?
It's an older city. You try to stay on top of it best you can. There is no automated, you know, monitoring system. So, you know, folks who have systems underneath the ground do rely on people calling issues in, and it's always a great help. But there is a city underneath the city that we need to reinvest in and pay attention to.
Yeah. Andrew Weil, let me turn to you. We mentioned the 155-year-old building that had the problem in McLeod's Landing. This is kind of where you come in. What about these older structures? You want to preserve them, but they're getting really old.
Well, in some cases. And in that case, that particular building, I don't know what caused that failure, but there are a lot of different things that can go wrong with a building of any age. The vast majority of the buildings in the city, though, of course, were built before 1950. And I would estimate that we probably have 100,000 or more buildings that are over 100 years old. And fortunately, they are masonry buildings. They were built by people who did not have a concept of planned obsolescence in their minds when they constructed them. They were built to last, and they're very sturdy as long as they're maintained properly. And so that's, I think, the big issue in the city is maintaining the buildings, doing the proper preventative maintenance, and making it so those buildings have a chance to last indefinitely.
Is that mandated by law, perhaps?
Well, I mean, there are standards, there are building codes that property owners are supposed to adhere to, and they can be cited for violations of those codes. But the way it really works in practice, there isn't a lot of money for enforcement, and there aren't a lot of teeth to the actual codes.
So we're back to money again. It doesn't take very long, does it? David Lott, let me turn to you from your perspective as an architect. What is your take on the infrastructure issue?
I actually think we're in a really great place here in St. Louis. We have one of the most resilient building materials that you see anywhere in the country. Brick is a 300 to 500 year material. As Andrew pointed out, many of our buildings are less than 100 years old. Some may be as old as 150 years old, but I don't really see any sense in being alarmist about buildings falling down around St. Louis.
Well, brick is a very durable product, needless to say, but I worry about the mortar.
Right.
And that's where the problem arises.
You're right. Water is brick's worst enemy.
No, mortar is what I said, that the cement that glues the bricks together.
Well, it's mortar where the water gets into the walls. You'll find that all of your buildings around North St. Louis where you see significant decay, that the roofs have holes in them, windows are missing. This is where water has a chance to get in the walls. The brick wall is actually a very sophisticated system in which it can take in water and is porous. And as humidity decreases, the water is released through the mortar. As long as the mortar is intact, a brick wall will stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. As soon as the mortar has decayed, fallen out of the brick wall, that's where we're looking at real issues.
So you don't think we should be alarmed, as some people are when they see a building sliding past them?
No, not at all. The Laclede's Landing building is actually a very special case. If you look back at the 1875 Compton and Dry aerial lithography of that area, you'll see that there's actually a building that stands between that building where the Drunken Fish is and the Eads Bridge. And what that tells me is that's a party wall that was between two buildings that was never meant to see exterior rain exposure. The bricks that you see on the face of a building have a harder face than what you see as a party wall. So naturally, they're more porous because they're not as hard. So that wall probably took on a lot more water than it ever was intended to.
And if you want to see more of the Compton and Dry drawings, go to the History Museum.
Oh, absolutely. There's a great
exhibit still on. Bill, now back to you. I think if David's not going to be alarmed or want to cause alarm, maybe a different story with you. I mean, we're talking bridges. We remember what happened in Minneapolis. And we're talking roads. It's a different situation with our roadways, isn't it? I mean, an alarming situation. Right. Is that too strong a word?
I mean, if you look at the older bridges, they were designed for different loads and different uses. Today, you have heavier loads on semis going across. We have the need for bike and ped accommodations on bridges. And these structures, if you go back in time, again, 50, 75 years ago, we didn't need as many lanes on a bridge. So we've taken up a lot of that room, either squeezing additional lanes on. The traffic, you know, VMT, vehicle miles traveled, since the invention of the car, skyrocketed straight up. It fell off a few years ago, but now it's back up. If you look the last year and a half, 2 years, VMT is on a rapid rise again. So the amount of the people travel. We're also in the Amazon culture, where people want something at their door 2 days from now. And those, while it's nice to stay located in one location, we depend on groceries. We have to get to the emergency room. We have to get the Amazon delivery in 2 days. So transportation is a real key, and keeping that infrastructure updated to today's need is a real challenge.
Lance, alarm too strong a word to use with regard to what's going on underground?
For us, yes. But, you know, I think, you know, Bill hit on an important point. A lot of these systems and infrastructure systems were built decades, if not a century ago, or at least planned out. And the modern demand on them, the modern usage, is much different than was ever intended. A lot of what we're doing is modernizing our system, bringing it up to one standard, if you would. You know, over the years, we've taken in 79 separate sewer districts, all built to a different rhyme and reason, some built well, some not built well. So we've really been on a generational path, if you would, to bring that system up to a common denominator and comply with the Clean Water Act. But it's about reinvesting in our system, having a plan in place. And the one thing that I think is very frustrating is there is not a national, let alone a state plan, for how to prioritize and reinvest in our infrastructure systems.
Well, I think we're getting a good dose of that during the current time with regard to highway funding and what have you. They're kind of dragging their feet in Washington on that. Also, we've had some opportunities for people to weigh in on this here in Missouri, for instance, with regard to transportation. And it occurs to me with these votes and these initiatives being turned down that people just don't seem to care. Andrew? This is not entirely in your wheelhouse, but you mentioned money a moment ago.
Well, I think that people do care, but everyone has a different idea about how to pay for it, and an idea from building infrastructure to systems infrastructure to transportation infrastructure. No one's come up with a scheme that everyone can agree on yet.
Well, we had a bond issue turned down in the city of St. Louis. We had the transportation issue that was turned down by the state, statewide. This was to raise money to do exactly the kind of thing, Bill, that you're talking about. So what happens now? I mean, where's the money going to come from to continue the work that you're talking about that we have to have done?
Right. You know, on a state and federal level, infrastructure is something that you don't plan today, what you want to do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's actually a very long-term investment. So, you know, if we want to build a new river bridge or get the funding to replace one of these, it's a long-term investment. And part of the issue is on a federal side, they have to resolve how to fund transportation. And it's not just roads and bridges. It's an integrated system because people want choices when they travel. They want to be able to get on a transit system. They want to go to the airport. They want the freight delivered to their community to get those packages delivered. So, you know, funding in the long term, it's really it's not an issue that people don't think it's important. It's, again, how do you fund it? And it's traditionally, highways and bridges were funded on a gas tax. And today it's not really sustainable because as vehicles got more fuel efficient, we actually have less revenue today than we did 20 years ago. So if you think of your own maintaining a house or anything else, if you had the same revenue today that you had 20 years ago, it'd be very difficult. And at the same time, the demand on that system has gone up. So funding transportation on a gas tax, which worked for generations, today it's not a sustainable thing because of energy efficiency in vehicles and alternate fuels. You know, you can have an electric car today that doesn't use gasoline.
And people will drive farther using that car and put more wear and tear on the bridges and the highways.
Correct.
Well, we can talk about highway funding, Lance, but that really doesn't help you guys much. Where does the money come from where should it be coming from, and where will it come from to fix what's below the ground?
Sure. When you look back historically, the Clean Water Act passed in 1972 was, pardon the pun, the watershed moment in our industry, and it provided robust federal funding for improvements to sewer systems, cleaning up waterways, getting sewage and overflows off of local waterways. Through the 70s and 80s, though, that funding essentially dried up. Today, it is essentially non-existent. Once in a while, there is a grant or something available from the federal government. But today, it's mainly low-cost financing through the state of Missouri, and that's similar to every other state. But we have $4.7 billion in needs, and we could use all that financing and then some, but where would it leave the rest of the state? But even financing, issuing bonds, that's paid for. It's a loan that essentially our ratepayers take out. We take that loan out on their behalf. So 99.99% of this funding is coming from local pocketbooks. And that is the fact of life really across the board in many situations, that the funding is being pushed down lower and lower to the local level.
And by that, do you mean that we can all look forward to higher MSD rates?
Yeah, they are. They've more than doubled over the last 10 years. Right now, the average rate is in the low 40s for the average single family home. By the next decade, it will be over $100 a month. And that's not unusual, though, when you look nationally. You know, Atlanta has been paying well over $100 a month for their sewer bills. And that's that is the cost of reinvesting in these systems, and that's the price to be paid when maintenance is deferred.
So, Bill and Lance, what we're talking about here is pay me now or pay me later, because sooner or later. I see that there are a couple of things going on. There's an initiative petition that may be out there soon with regard to increasing the cigarette tax for transportation needs. And fuel taxes, vehicle fees, tolls, you know, that keeps coming up. I'm guessing you don't want to talk about tolls, but a lot of people are.
You know, it's MoDOT's job to figure out what the transportation needs are and how much those cost. It's really up to the legislature and the people to figure out how to pay for it. So there's many options out there. One thing, the Highway Commission has actually taken a unique step recently on I-70. You know, I-70 is a key infrastructure connecting the region, St. Louis to Kansas City. They opened it up to the private side a month and a half ago, something called the Road to Tomorrow, where they're seeking innovation from the private side. How can we use I-70 not only for tomorrow's needs and technology, but is how can it drive revenue to help fund the highway? So I think we are exploring how to fund things in the future. All of these systems, from sewers to highways, there's really no disagreement that they're really critical. It's really how do you fund it and what mechanism makes sense today for that long-term investment. And it is a long-term investment.
Andrew and David, I'll turn to you for this next one. I have a note here asking, you know, the debate is ongoing with regard to preserving the old and building the new. When does it make sense to preserve and finally throw up your hands and say, you know, let's put some new stock in here?
Well, I don't think that the argument for preservation is really ever intended to be an argument against, you know, new buildings or new construction. I think it's an issue of balancing, you know, what are we trading what for? In many cases, we have very useful, very intact, very stable, attractive buildings that are capable of serving present and future generations for, you know, for many, many years to come. Trading that in for a new building just because you're tired of looking at the old one doesn't necessarily always make sense. But, you know, in St. Louis, we have an abundancy of vacant lots. So there's plenty of room for new buildings. It's not an either-or sort of proposition. We don't have to take something down to build something new. Certainly, though, if a building has become unstable or unsafe or the cost is just simply too high in order to stabilize or rehabilitate an older building, then, in some cases, it makes sense to take it down, but especially if it's going to be replaced with something as good or better.
With regard to preserving some of these old – where does money come from to do that? Is it just the individual owner, or are there funds for that sort of thing?
Well, in most cases, it's just the individual property owner, which is something that separates what we're talking about in terms of buildings from what we're talking about in terms of, you know, utilities and transportation. Mm-hmm. It's mostly private property owners. Of course, there are certain tax credit programs that are in place to help people to invest in these older buildings, which in the long term reaps benefits for the cities and the municipalities because it increases the tax base and puts buildings back into service. But mostly it's private money.
David, you're involved now with the old courthouse. So what is your involvement and what's going on there?
Old courthouse specifically, we're doing some ADA improvements. You'll see some new ramps to help people get up into this building. You can't get inside of the first floor without going up a full flight of stairs. There'll be mechanical, electrical, plumbing improvements. Right now, the building is not sprinklered as it should, so it's a safety hazard. We're also going to be adding an elevator, new restrooms. And you'll see some temporary exhibits there right now that my firm isn't directly affiliated with, but that's kind of the launch point for how you get to the arch grounds right now.
Well, what kind of shape is that building in?
You know, that's one of the oldest structures in St. Louis right now. It's 1839, I believe, built in multiple phases. It's still got the original floors in it. Overall, it's in great shape. I mean, this is built with stone, which is even better than our man-made brick. It's showing some signs of age. They had to do some extensive cornice replacement a couple years back now. The copper roof was replaced. But we're talking about materials that have hundreds of years of lifespan you know, there, again, there's no concern for this building. It's going to stay there for a long time to come.
But it's probably being looked at and cared for more carefully than most because of what it is.
True,
it's
true.
A historic building. Our time is beginning to wind down. Let me try to put a bottom line on this with each of you. Bill, once again, I'll start with you. So where do we go from here? We need money and we have a problem. What's right. DOT?
You know, the people, we went out and asked the people what was important to them a couple years ago and taking care of the system that we have. We have a tremendous investment in our infrastructure, in highways and bridges today. Maintaining those is the first priority. Safety is key too. People want to be safe on roads. It takes sometimes very simple 2 foot of a shoulder on a rural road to a guard cable on an urban road. And then invest in projects that spur economic development. In St. Louis, if you go the Cortex area, if you look at that, we have brand new bridges at Boyle, Taylor, Newstead. Those investments, replacing a 50-year-old bridge, is key to attracting investments in our region. You see that at Dorset and 270, where Edward Jones decided to stay there because of a new interchange. Or at Umpsall, if you look at the investment there, the new I-70 brought Express Scripts to the region, and there that's the headquarters. So that and providing transportation options. People want options. They don't want just cars. They want, you know, bikes, pedestrians. You know, they want to be an interconnected transit system.
Right. Lance, where do we go from here in 30 seconds?
Well, MSD, we have a plan. We're executing that plan, but we need that for the rest of our state, the rest of our region, because infrastructure investment, not only does it create jobs, like Bill said, it attracts out-of-town businesses and jobs. And we need to have a serious, serious conversation about that here in the state of Missouri.
Andrew Wilde, you're pretty comfortable with where you are right now in this whole process?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like for the city to have a little bit more teeth in terms of enforcing building codes. And also, I think that it's important to set some money aside for stabilizing buildings the way we set money aside for demolishing buildings.
Mm-hmm. And David Lott, we'll give you a last word. What's your final thought?
You know, I'm not going to mince words. It's expensive to maintain these old buildings, but there are historic tax credits that are available. And when using the historic tax credits, there's oversight that these buildings are repaired appropriately. And to piggyback what Andrew was saying, you can either dangle a carrot or use a rod. So we got to enforce our current codes, and we have to offer incentives to help people, you know, keep roofs on these places. And these brick buildings will be standing for many years to come.
We'll have to leave it at there. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. You just heard from David Lott, an architect with Trivers Associates, Andrew Wilde with the Landmarks Association here with us as well, as is Lance Lacombe from MSD and Bill Schnell with MoDOT. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for being with us and talking
thank
about
you.
This.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Kathy Boyd Fenger, the head of Logo School, about the institution's 45-year history serving at-risk students. We'll also take a look at Vicki Sauter's recent book on Internet use by seniors. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.